Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host this week is not Brian Johnson. It is Scott Fish.
I'm back.
You're back. It's only been 5 months or whatever. We've missed you.
It does feel that long.
I know, man. That's been way too long.
Way too long.
Yeah.
It's good to be back, though.
It is good to have you back. I blame the pandemic. It's a convenient excuse for many things, and we'll... But it's great to have you back. And
I blame Brian Johnson.
That just too.
Greedy.
Icing
He's
you out.
Greedy. He just wouldn't let me in.
Exactly. You'll be a regular back on the show beginning in August.
Yep.
Which will be fantastic. And we're in the middle of SFB 11.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. I think I'm in my drafts in round 11 right now.
Something like that.
Halfway
done.
Yeah, halfway done. Lots of quarterbacks going early. Lots of tight ends going early.
Yep.
It's And so Scott Fish Bowl 11 going great. 1,100-ish teams just
no,
in the core one,
1,920 teams.
1,900. So yeah. 1,200 teams.
No, 1,920. So nearly 2,000 teams.
2,000 teams.
And then another 2,500 doing satellites.
Jeez, that's amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
So if you're out there and you commission one fantasy league and have trouble with that, imagine
this. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Just multiply
that
by about 300-something.
Oh, jeez. You have no tolerance for goofiness when you're commissioning that many leagues.
It's herding cats.
You're America's commissioner now. Were it not for the fact that John, the Commissioner Habermeyer. You like that?
I like that.
All right. John, the Commissioner Habermeyer, and he's forever locked up the Commissioner moniker, but what about America's Commissioner?
I like it.
If you Google America's Commissioner, you might be the first. Nobody's taken it yet. What do you think?
I might as well take it.
I hereby sanctify and officially name you America's Commissioner. Scott Fish.
See, as the godfather of fantasy football, I feel you have that right. I feel you're laying the sword down on my shoulders.
That's
now.
Right.
You got that. Okay.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
We have an exciting announcement. We are opening an official Scott Fish Bowl. It's not, I guess, a satellite. It's a side project. Guillotine league.
It's an event. It's an SFB event.
Guillotine league for Scott Fish Bowl. All the proceeds go to Scott Fish Bowl in Fantasy Cares. It is $50 to join. It's the Super Chop format. Most of our listeners already know about Guillotine Leagues. The Super Chop format is a little bit different in that it's 12 team leagues. You will join one 12-team league. If you are the winner of your 12-team league, you then go to the playoffs with the other 11 winners for a chance to get to be the champion. Now, for the $50, and if we fill this, Scott, when we fill it, that's $7,000 to Fantasy
that
Cares.
That is a lot of money.
That, which is fantastic. Your $50 gets you a pretty good deal on this. RotoWire is kicking in a free NFL subscription with your entry fee. So that's a $30 value, and you get that as soon as the league fills. So you get that. Then, if you are one of the 12 league winners in our Super Chop format for the Scott Fish Bowl 11 Guillotine Leagues, you get two things. You get an automatic entry. Well, I'll let you tell.
Sure. You get an automatic entry in SFB 12 next year to play with your favorite analysts and celebrities and former professional athletes and movie stars and TV actors and stuff, all the people you want to play with in SFB 12. And you also get a custom ring from Trophy Smack.
Yes. And it's beautiful. And it's got specific artwork just for this Guillotine League style Scott Fish Bowl.
Yes.
It's a fish in a bowl with a guillotine.
It is. It's awesome. I love that graphic.
It's very nice. Matt Walsh did a great job on that. And then if you win the whole thing, you get a Trophy Smack trophy. That you'll be the only one in the world with this.
Yes.
The Guillotine League version of the Trophy Smack trophy.
They make the best, most unique trophies.
That's the fantastic stuff. And we're grateful for them. The focus, and by the way, if you're interested in joining this Scott Fish Bowl Guillotine League, follow Scott Fish on Twitter, ScottFish24. Follow me, @PaulCharchian, and guillotineleagues.com. You'll have information coming, if not, probably by the time you hear this. When as we're taping this, it's not yet live, but it's, I think it will be live when people hear this. GuillotineLeagues.com. The focus of the rest of this show, Scott, is the NFC West.
Yes.
We've been breaking down all of the teams, forward-looking. We're not repeating what you already know happened last year. What do we think is going to happen for the four teams in the NFC West this season? And at the end of each team, we'll identify the riskiest player at current ADP and the player with the most upside based on current ADP.
Yep.
It's exciting. I'm going to let you go first with a team I'm very excited about, a team that I think will challenge the Bucs to be in the Super Bowl for the NFC. One of the two favorites. That is the Los Angeles Rams.
I think Vegas agrees with you on that one. It's they're right up there, a top five betting
favorite. They should be.
The Rams. Okay, so we'll start with the passing game. Matthew Stafford currently going off the board as QB12, eighth or ninth round, usually around the eighth round. Usually for me, quarterbacks going in the single digits is a little too high for me, but I love everything about Stafford this year. In fact, I think that QB12 is his floor.
Yeah. It feels that way, doesn't it, given the talent surrounding him?
Yeah. Consistently with the Lions, he's had 4,000-plus yard years, 20, 30 touchdown years, and now he goes to an offense where Sean McVay made Jared Goff a 4,600-yard and 32-touchdown quarterback.
Yes.
And you could argue the weapons now might even be a little bit better than they were because maybe the same. I don't know, similar. But they have a great defense. They had a great defense during that great Goff year, so I'm not concerned about that being slowing down McVay. McVay has been proven to let his offense, you know, go, even with the defense being good. They don't slow down the game. I think, though, that 4,600 yards, 25, 30 touchdowns is pretty much a floor for Stafford this year.
It is. Doesn't it feel? It feels like he was a top 12 quarterback with the Lions and all the things that were wrong there. And now Stafford gets by far the best coaching he's ever had.
And the best defense, the best running game he's ever had. And the best wide receivers, receiving options he's ever had. And we'll go there with Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. And I'm going to lump them together a little bit here because they're both going in the fifth round. You're probably not going to get both on your team when you're drafting. It would be tricky, but not impossible. Maybe a corner. Maybe if you do a reach around on one of them, maybe. But one thing I found very interesting with Cooper Kupp when I was doing the research is that he's had 90 catches in back-to-back years, even through injuries.
Yeah.
And that's not targets. That's catches. That's a lot of catches.
That is. And that's, you know, that's where those of us that are drafting for safety, I like Cooper Kupp more than Woods. If I'm drafting for upside, then I think I like Woods more than Kupp.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And early reports from the OTAs and whatnot, there's a strong connection with Stafford. Woods is a guy who is super consistent, like just 60, 70 yards every game for a couple years in a row. Last year when the offense came down, he was no longer that consistent guy, but I think it comes back with Stafford and he becomes a consistent option again. He's got great deep ball potential, which is something that's been Stafford's strong suit for a long time.
Yes. And so, something they never had with Goff.
So
that field's going to get stretched in a way it hasn't before.
It's interesting. Goff did have a lot of 20 plus yard passes. But he won't have the completion rate or the style of offense that the Stafford's going to have with that. The other two receivers, wide receivers at least, Van Jefferson and DeSean Jackson. Van Jefferson, obviously a rookie last year, got in a very, very tiny amount, but they've hyped him up a lot. McVay loves him, but they did bring in DeSean Jackson. And I feel like as long as DeSean Jackson stays healthy, they're going to hurt each other for fantasy. They're just going to, they may have three wide receiver sets a lot, but they might cancel each other out just enough to not be relevant for us.
From a fantasy standpoint, we need Van Jefferson or DeSean Jackson to get hurt, and it'll probably be DeSean Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. History. If history tells us anything. Exactly. Yeah. That is the concern with Jackson. He's that deep threat that when they had Cooks as the third receiver, they loved having that deep threat. So, yeah, I'm staying away from both of them.
What do you think about drafting Jackson with the last pick of your draft, and you could just, you know,
drop him if he doesn't
drop him if it doesn't work out, or just start him in the first like three games when you know that he's going to be healthy and you could start him there maybe, but I don't know. I think it's probably wait and see.
Yeah,
you and I are far more excited
Yes.
By the tight end position.
We are.
For Los Angeles.
Yeah, and it's really a lot about value. It's Tyler Higbee. Gerald Everett is out of town now. We have like pretty much a 5-game sample size of Higbee with Everett, you know, mostly out of the games and them running one tight end sets, which is what we expect them to do this year. Mm-hmm. And in that 5-game set at the end of 2019 season, Higbee averaged 9 catches for 105 yards on 11 targets.
That's nuts.
It's per game numbers. That's ridiculous. 100. Even if you have that, it's like a 4 or 5 for 55 tight end. That's a top 12 tight end nowadays.
And if you took last year's numbers where both Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee neither were very startable
right.
or reliable, but if you put their numbers together last year, you had tight end 5.
Yeah.
So if you think that Higbee's going to get most of Everett's work, you've got tight end 5 in Higbee, and he's going off the board as tight end, what, 17?
Yep, tight end 17.
He's so misdrafted right now.
A lot of analysts have him in their top 10 in rankings.
I do.
It's just a discrepancy is what it is. It's just too far off.
You watch his changes between now and week one.
Yeah, yep.
Higbee's going to start incrementally going up draft boards.
And once again, we think this offense is going to be much better than last. You mentioned Higbee plus Everett last year. Mm-hmm. Now imagine with a much better offense.
Yeah, right. Better quarterback throwing the ball. Right, yeah.
Yeah, so.
The upside is so big.
For way Higbee. Undervalued right now for Higbee. On to the running game. Akers is currently going RB10. I've mentioned I feel this is pretty fair. I feel like he ended this season with that 22 to 25, 26 touches per game, and people are hoping for that again. I think it's going to be a little below that, but I still think he's going to be a bell cow anytime you get a running back with that many touches going on. I do think this is a year with 17 games and reliance on second running backs all over the NFL that Henderson as RB55 in the 13th or 14th round, I expect 450 to 500 touches for running backs in this offense. I expect Henderson to be on the field 25% of the time, 20, 25% of the time. I think he's going to be a back that we'll see nearing 10 touches a game. And if Akers for some reason goes down, he went down last year, he could be huge. I'm trying to steal him in those middle double-digit rounds. But I feel like Akers as a first-round pick makes sense.
Late first round, early second round. I love Akers. He's in my running back 5 right now. Yep. And the reason I love him is the usage at the end of the year.
Yep.
He was at, you know, as you mentioned, he was getting whatever 20, I think it was 25 total touches per game.
I think his targets could come up, honestly.
They could come up.
They really need to.
Going into the playoffs, it was, I think, 25 per game over the last like 4 or 5 games of the year. And then I go back to, I know Sean McVay has run a committee the last couple of years.
Yes.
But before that, Todd Gurley was a freaking beast who he ran into the ground. And I want to be a part of that. An absolute workhorse. So Todd McVay's got it in him to have a workhorse back. I just think he hasn't had a good enough back. You know, Malcolm Brown was never good enough to be a workhorse back.
I don't know. Maybe he saw that he ran Gurley down and he's going to be like, all running Gurley down was get me to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, why would I want to do that again?
Why would I want to do that again?
Right. So I think Akers has got 18 to 22-ish touches a game built into him, and that is going to be enough to make him a rock solid RB1. And I like Akers.
Yes.
All right. Have we missed anybody? I think we've covered.
No, we've
covered all the key points here.
We've covered them. You mentioned at the top that you wanted me to give someone who's super undervalued.
Give me the riskiest player at ADP and the player with the most upside based on ADP.
All right. So I think the player with the most upside based on ADP is pretty clearly Higbee.
Correct.
I think at tight end 17, like I think it's this. I said Stafford being drafted at his floor. I think Higbee's being drafted well below his floor for some reason. So Higbee's that one.
All right. How about the riskiest?
Riskiest. This is really tough. I don't think any of them are that risky where they're going. I actually like the value on all of these players, but if I had to pick one, it's just got to be Akers because he's a first rounder.
Where is he going?
Yeah. And you know, running backs, we saw McCaffrey and Barkley last year. Like, and Akers got hurt last year. That's
where Akers is going from, I'm putting on my do the opposite hat right now.
Right.
Where he is going is where all so many of the running back failures come, mm-hmm. is the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, when you're paying this heavy price on a guy who isn't Derrick Henry,
right.
Dalvin Cook, right? Yep. You know, these proven workhorse backs.
Yep.
These are guys you're projecting to be great, but a lot of the time it doesn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the range where they've shown the potential and they've mm-hmm. done it in spans, but you don't know that they can do it for a full season yet.
Correct. Let's move. Well, actually, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk about the San Francisco 49ers, another team that could be a fringe Super Bowl team if things yep. break the right way, in an offense that's going to get a lot better. Let's talk Niners when we come back in just a moment. Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian and Scott Fish with you. We already broke down the Rams. Let's pivot from one brilliant offensive mind, Sean McVay, to the best offensive mind in the game, and that is Kyle Shanahan.
For some reason, the way you said that, like brilliant, brilliant offensive mind, like I was thinking like George Carlin.
Offensive. Yes.
I don't know why that came to mind. But
and you know what? The funny thing is, if you go back now and listen to his stuff, by today's standards,
oh, yeah.
it's lukewarm.
Yes.
It's like, you know,
yes.
it's like, I don't know, you could insert that into like a kid's
game.
Show. It's yeah. nothing by today's standards. Carlin was great in his day.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff does not hold up all that well.
I can see that.
Trippy hippie weatherman stuff. It just doesn't work today, but a lot of comedy is that way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan's the best offensive mind in the game, and the Niners are primed for an offensive breakout after last year ranking 14th in yards and 21st in points, using mostly Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard mm-hmm. at quarterback. I think this team gets way, way better on offense. And part of my optimism is around the offensive line. The Niners get two huge boosts in the offseason, the re-signing of left tackle Trent Williams. Williams was Pro Football Focus's number one ranked left tackle last year. Why Washington ever got to a point where they let him go was crazy. And then they also signed center Alex Mack, a longtime veteran. 16th ranked center doesn't sound like great, but when last year center ranked like 30th, it's a sizable improvement for them. And they still have Mike McGlinchey, a former first rounder on the right side, and he's very good, especially in the run. So I like the offensive line, and that really brings us to what's going to be one of the best developments to watch in the preseason, Scott, and that is Trey Lance.
Mm-hmm.
How ready is Trey Lance to make an impact and how soon? And watching him in the preseason will be fascinating. He could be every bit as raw as an 11-start college player can be.
Yep.
But if he looks good, man, the runway on Jimmy Garoppolo could be very short.
Yeah, I feel like it would be. I have a couple different thoughts on this, that A, Shanahan should probably see the tactical advantage of having a guy with that kind of mobility in an mm-hmm. offense he already likes to run.
Yeah.
The other one is, this is, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, we have a quarterback that was benched, not for injury, but legitimately benched for poor play by C.J. Beathard and Nick Mullins over the last 2 years. So I think the leash is going to be short.
Also, guided them to a Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is that. I mean, yeah. You know, Garoppolo has been functional.
Yes. Yeah, it's
he knows the offense. He knows all the nuances. You know, I think,
and he's got real competition behind him now. So
yeah, and maybe he'll be better for it.
Yeah,
maybe. Lance is the player fantasy owners want in the game. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah,
and it makes it tricky to draft Trey Lance, knowing you may get literally no starts from him. Look at Patrick Mahomes. They didn't start him his entire rookie year.
Yep.
Well, week 17.
Week 17. Yeah,
you know, in a meaningless week 17 yep. game. That's it. So, The snazzy draft angle,
yep.
Scott, is this. You draft both Garoppolo yep. and Trey Lance at their ADP. For Garoppolo, it's pick 262.
It honestly feels high.
It's free. And then Trey Lance is going off the board as quarterback 25, pick 148. So you take Lance and like that's roughly round 12, round 13. So you take Lance there at 12 and 13. That's cheap. considering how good Trey Lance can be, you back him up with Jimmy Garoppolo as the last pick of your draft, and you've got Kyle Shanahan starting quarterback.
Yep.
And why do you want Kyle Shanahan starting quarterback, even if it's Jimmy Garoppolo? Over the last 3 years, Shanahan's quarterbacks as a team, San Francisco's finished 17th, 10th, and 19th in touchdown passes, most of them thrown by Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. And you've only invested a 13th rounder and a 20th rounder to get that quarterback hookup.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Matt Ryan had some good stats with Shanahan, too.
Matt Ryan did okay.
He did okay. Yeah, so might have had an MVP year in there.
I love that angle.
Or close to.
Let's talk to wide receivers. Brandon Ayuk is fascinating to me. I think he just had one of the better rookie seasons that nobody's talking about last year.
Yep.
In his final six games, by the way, in the middle of which he had COVID, in his final six full games, despite catching one hoppers from Beathard and Mullins, his average line was 12 targets, 8 receptions, 83 yards, and almost a touchdown per game.
Wow. That's almost Tyler Higbee without Everett.
No. Exactly. Exactly. Now, in fairness, Kittle was gone for half of those games. Samuel was gone for half of those games. But it also demonstrates that Ayuk can carry a passing offense.
Yeah, that's the way I see it, is that Ayuk showed that he's a true alpha even with nobody else to throw to.
I think he has wide receiver 10, 12 upside for Brandon Ayuk.
Absolutely. Completely agree.
Then there's Deebo Samuel, who lost much of last year. First, he had the preseason foot injury. That cost him 3 or 4 games at the start of the season. Then he got COVID. Then he had a hamstring injury. But Deebo Samuel still played in 7 games, and he led the NFL in yards after catch at 12 yards.
It's just unreal.
Which is unreal.
Yeah, he basically had a negative. I'm pretty sure he did have a negative A dot, average depth of target.
I think it was negative 0.2 yards his A dot. Yeah, so they're throwing bubble screens to him, and he was turning a typical bubble screen into a gain of 12 yards. Which is pretty impressive.
It makes sense. They use it as an extension of the run game, and Shanahan's run games are amazing.
They are amazing. if they can stretch him a little bit more downfield, and Trey Lance would be the way to do that, Deebo Samuel gets even more interesting, but he is a remarkably powerful...
He bullies people.
Doesn't he? Oh, I think he's the closest thing to Percy Harvin when Percy Harvin won Rookie of the Year and he was so good in those first couple of years. I think Deebo Samuel's right on that trajectory, which I love.
Perfect for Trey Lance, too, who reads the field low to high.
Yeah, so he'll be looking at Samuel first and then working his way downfield.
And don't take that wrong. Trey Lance has a great deep ball too.
He does.
But Matt Waldman has talked about how that's how he reads the field. And with Deebo down short, that's perfect.
Richie James is your other probable starter. Jalen Hurts coming off his ACL from last year, and I think Mohamed Sanu honestly could get cut. I'm not drafting him. Let's go to the tight end.
Quarterback? Third string quarterback?
Yeah, could be. Let's go to the tight end. You already know everything about George Kittle, and you know he's awesome. I guess the thing I want you to know, two things. One is fully recovered from the injuries last year. You may have forgotten he actually played in week 16 and week 17 last year, so fully healthy right now for George Kittle. Mm-hmm. And, Scott, you're getting him at a full round later in ADPs. Third round this year. He was second round last year for George Kittle. And his quarterbacking is going to be better this year. One way or another, the quarterbacking will be better.
Yep. He does have more to compete with now. I mean, Ayuk and Samuel are going to take some targets that he would have had the last couple of years. But, once again, more potent offense. Rising tide raises all boats.
So that's the passing game, and we love the passing game.
Yes.
The running game's all frustration for the Niners, for fantasy owners. So you know Kyle Shanahan works. You're going to get a lot of running, but it's going to be spread out over guys and in different situations and ways that are going to frustrate fantasy owners a lot. I want to start with rookie Trey Sermon because there's so much interest in him. They took Trey Sermon in the third round, and I think that's a reach. And I don't think he's a special player. Pro Football Focus had Sermon graded in the 6th round. Obviously, the Niners saw things they liked. And there are things that I like. He's got good balance, good start-stop ability. He's got decent vision. But there's a lot of things I don't like about Trey Sermon. He's not that fast. He's a bit tall for the position, which gives defenders a big target to hit. He ran behind these big offensive lines when he was at Oklahoma and Ohio State that opened up massive holes for him. I think he's just an average athlete, and they rarely use him in the passing game. I don't think he's a special guy, but I think you're a little warmer on Trey Sermon than I am.
Yeah, a little bit. I just think that they're going to run a ton, and it's all about opportunity in what's going to be a good offense. I think he's going to get 150, 200 touches. I think that they both might. And I think that the rest of the running backs tend to have some injury history, especially Mostert.
Yeah, so for sure.
I love Mostert when he plays, and Jeff Wilson's going to miss the first month of the season or so. I just think there's opportunity there. And on the passing game thing, I do find it interesting how Shanahan has taken Devonta Freeman in Atlanta did not catch passes in college. He caught maybe 50, and he was catching 30, 40, 50 balls in the pros. So, I mean, there's a chance.
Yeah, Sermon might develop it.
Shoulders shrugging, maybe a chance. Right.
People can't see your shoulders shrugging, but I can.
That's why I said it out loud.
So let's talk about Mostert for a minute. When healthy, he's a good back. So last year, I think he appeared in 7 games off the top of my head. But what I can tell you for certain is 5.5 yards per carry for Mostert in a bad year.
And he's always had high yards per carry and high yards per reception.
He has.
That's been a Mostert thing.
And he can catch. He averaged 0.7 yards over expectation, which was 10th best in the league last year. Mostert's a good back. Yeah. His average draft position makes it tricky to go to war with him. He is running back 26 in round 5. So you're kind of in that area. It's like Mike Davis or Raheem Mostert.
That's where you get out of the clear-cut starters and into the backfields that you hope one of them can take it over. Mike Davis he's got all the chances in the world to be a top
all the opportunity.
Back.
But so did Todd Gurley, and he was brutal with getting all the carries.
Yep.
So opportunity doesn't always end up being.
And honestly, Mike Davis last year, when he did have he started out hot, but he really tailed off quick. So
Right. Yeah. He didn't look like he was a season-long full-time starter, which he had never been before last year.
Yeah.
Wayne Gallman's also now in San Francisco, and he muddies the waters even further. He was actually pretty capable last year with the Giants. Likely him, Wilson later when he comes back, they're going to frustrate fantasy owners to some degree. Mostly, I'm just staying away from this whole situation.
Do you wonder, so Mostert is 29, and it's the last year of his contract. Does that change anything for you? Do they run him into the ground a little more, knowing they're not going to keep him potentially? Does that weigh at all?
I just think Shanahan is who he is. I think, and I don't think it does.
He's just going to run him a ton.
He'll just play his games with that running back by committee. And
sometimes we play that factor. I just didn't know if that weighed in this one.
I don't think it does here. Okay. But that's just me.
Yeah,
a different coach, I would give you a different answer.
Exactly. Yeah, different coach,
different answer.
Threw it out there.
The riskiest player at ADP to me is Trey Sermon, running back 40 in round 9. I realize that you're not paying a lot at that point, but I feel like he's not the. I can't tell you when he'll start a game. And maybe not this year. Even if Mostert goes out, it might be Wayne Gallman starting or Jeff Wilson starting. So to me, there's more risk there. The player with the most upside compared to ADP, and there's a bunch of Niners that fall into this category, but Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver 27 in the fifth round, is my guy, showing some special traits that can make him one of the league's better receivers.
I think both Ayuk and Samuel fall for me.
I agree.
I think they're both way
undervalued. So who would you take first?
I would take Ayuk.
I would too.
Yeah.
But not by a lot. I think on my cheat sheet, they're separated by 4,
as they should
five
be.
Spots.
They should be really
That's
close. They should be like the Cup and Woods of San Francisco.
It is similar to that. Yeah. There's a bit of a 1-2 punch in Seattle, but not really in the same way. Seattle's got DK Metcalf, who I think is in fantasy owners' minds, DK Metcalf is the focal point of that offense, just because of the highlights and the body and everything else, the special traits that he's got. Let's break down the Seattle Seahawks for this season.
Sure. I was wondering if we were going to take a break there or not.
Break coming up after the Seahawks.
Let's do that.
All right.
Seattle Seahawks, let's start with the passing game, which we seem to have each time. Russell Wilson.
It's not a requirement. You want to start with Chris Carson? It's fine by me because I love Chris Carson.
All right, let's start with Chris Carson because I love Chris Carson too.
All right.
I think we're two of the guys in the industry that love Chris Carson a little bit.
And we're it. Yeah. We're the only ones. Nobody else. Everybody else is like, oh, I got to take Chris Carson. I'm the guy like, yeah, I get to draft Chris Carson. Yes,
I got him in the late third, early fourth, whatever. He's my RB2. I love this because he can put up RB1 numbers, which we both believe. He's going RB19, late third, early fourth. Well below where we think. He's had 9 touchdowns in 3 straight years. Mm. He's had 1,300 plus total yards each of the 2018 and 2019. Last year he missed like 5 games or so he did not hit that total.
Yeah.
But this year, Pete Carroll has already talked about running the ball more, being more committed to the run. I think the offense is going to be a little better, a little more efficient. And it's always efficient, really. Offense is always efficient.
It is.
But if he stays healthy, I think he's got another 1,300 plus yard, 9 touchdowns in him. And going where he's going, RB19 is well below. He's going as the last of the bell cow backs. And mm-hmm. I think that's a flaw.
Yeah, agreed. It is. You know, Carson is a good back.
He's good.
And there's just nobody to take carries away from him. And I don't think Rashad Penny's any kind of threat.
It's getting worse. Penny just went in this month for another surgery on his knee, a cleanup on his knee from last year. And Penny's going RB53, 12th round. I actually liked that until this recent mm-hmm. news because I want all the backup running backs this year. I feel like with the 17 game season, those backup running backs, as I mentioned with Henderson earlier, those backup running backs are going to get on the field 20% of the time, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But with this one, Alex Collins is getting all the work right now with Carson and Penny not at OTAs. And Penny with the injury, man, I just think it's going to be a lot of Carson this year.
So Carson could get 280, 290, 300 total touches.
It could be one of those years.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those that we're going to talk about this now. Everybody's going to draft him in the fourth as RB19. And at the end of the year, we're going to be like, why didn't we see this?
Right.
Guess what? If you listen to Fantasy Football Weekly, right you would now, have seen this coming.
That's right. We're pretty confident about Chris Carson. All right, well, let's go to the passing game. Russell Wilson was great in the first half last year. And then in the second half, disaster. All these people that have been riding Russell Wilson in that passing game really got stuck in the second half when the whole Seattle offense really struggled.
Russell Wilson is currently going as QB6. He's going in the late fifth, and that's my problem. That's my problem with Wilson. You mentioned how he tailed off at the end of the year. There had been a lot of years in his career where he started slower, and then he was just super hot at the end of the year, which is maybe he's a half-season quarterback, and his final end-of-season numbers always look good.
Yeah.
But that's my problem with Wilson. I know he's probably fair, and his end-of-the-season numbers are going to be in that QB4, 5, 6, 7, 8 range. Like, mm-hmm. he's going to be a top 12 quarterback. My problem is he goes in the fifth round.
Yeah.
That's
not great.
Even in the sixth or seventh, even in the sixth, it's too bad.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't do it. His receiving game, though, there isn't a lot to talk about DK Metcalf. He's 1,300 yards. 8 to 10, 12 touchdown guy. Mm-hmm. He's going as wide receiver 4. He's going at that value. I don't see a path to outside of injury. I don't see a path for him not to be that 1,000 plus 8 to 12 touchdown receiver.
It feels like a lock for him.
Yeah.
Now, you know, like Russell Wilson, he did have some games where he just disappeared last year, but he's built to be in the end zone and found in the end zone.
And it's his third year, and there have been lots of players that have mentioned this, that and fantasy players have known for a year, third year wideout is a big deal.
Yep.
But like Chad Ochocinco has talked about this, where the third year, it's less about the stats going up. It's about the receiver finally understanding the game and mm-hmm. understanding how to do certain things.
And, I'd also like the stats to go up, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, but that goes in line with it. So Metcalf's on that. Like, I just don't – every receiver has down games. Most receivers have down games from time to time. It's going to happen, but he's going at the right place. What I don't like is Tyler Lockett at wide receiver 22. It's just way too high for me. End of the fifth round. I feel they're going to run more, as Carroll has stated. But even if they don't, Tyler Lockett has been so inconsistent over the last 2 years. I know he has 28 touchdowns in the last 3 years, which is amazing.
That's great.
Amazing. Yeah. That's awesome. That's
nine
awesome.
Touchdowns a season is a yeah. solid number.
It's like 10, 10, and 8 like, or whatever. But like 3 years ago, he was getting a touchdown like every other game. Like mm-hmm. he was super, super consistent. The last 2 years, though, however, 2019, he had nearly 50%, 49.8% of his fantasy points came in four games.
Oh,
and that is killer.
That means the rest of the games are really bad.
Yeah, yeah. And last year, he had four games over 70 yards. Eight of his 10 touchdowns came in three games.
Oh, like that kills you the rest of the time.
Yeah.
In guillotine leagues, he's a total disaster. This yeah. is the exact opposite of what you want. Yet Lockett is being drafted.
Yeah.
I think people are drafting him based on remembering the highlights and remembering the big games. They and he wasn't on your team.
The 200-yard game. The,
right, right.
Three touchdown games. Mm-hmm. I think he had two of those last year, two, three touchdown games. Yeah, that's what they're remembering, and they don't see that you're going to lose a lot of weeks. Because
you're going to lose a
but
lot.
You want him in there for those weeks that he doesn't. Mm-hmm. The problem with his draft position is I'm going to list players going within 10 picks on either side of him. Cooper Kupp, Kenny Golladay, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, Robert Woods, DJ Moore, Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins.
I'd rather have all of those guys.
100% of them.
Over
every
Tyler
single
Lockett.
One. Yep.
Yep. He's not on my draft board where based on where people are taking him right now.
Now you tell me he's an eighth or ninth round pick. I'm like,
oh, no, man.
He's my wide receiver three or flex
right.
wide receiver.
My flex
Heck, yeah.
guy, yeah.
But at this point, the only way he's your wide receiver three is if you're really weak at other positions.
Yeah.
where you're drafting him now.
And that's why Tyler Lockett would not be on any of my fantasy teams.
Exactly.
Because I'm not doing that.
Now, Eskridge is a rookie they drafted, a muscular, strong, not super tall, but like a muscular, strong, mm-hmm. you know, bully out there on the field, good receiver that we'll see how much play he gets. The third receiver in there has been relevant from time to time.
You could pick some David Moore spots every now
yes.
and again, and I think we take a chance yeah. on me. We take-homed him a couple of times
yeah.
during the year.
He's Chris Conley West.
Yeah, yeah, he is Chris Conley West. I like that.
So
is Conley in Houston? I think he's in Houston now.
I think he is, too. Yeah. Yep.
He was he is now
he
Chris
was in
Conley
Jacksonville
South.
when we kept mm-hmm. take-homing him, so that's why I went with the West.
And we hit it, by the way.
Yeah, you
hitting
hit
your,
it. No, you hit it. You consistently.
I was locked into Chris Conley.
You're
right. I'm not even
Conley's mother would call you up the day before.
That's right.
He's going to have a game this week.
Well, call me up or just turn her head and lean over.
Oh boy. Oh boy. No, but I like Eskridge. It's just when are you going to get him? When are you going to know when to start him? He should be on the field a decent amount, though. If he wins that role, mm-hmm. he should be on the outside there. He should be in the field a decent amount. Let's go to the tight ends, though. It's really just Everett is the only draftable one. Disley and Parkinson aren't being drafted. I know there's hype about Parkinson being, you know, the 6'7" big mm-hmm. potential red zone target, and Pete Carroll's talked about him, but I need to see him be a factor before I'm doing anything with him in fantasy.
Yeah.
Gerald Everett is the interesting one. I have long called him tight end Cordarrelle Patterson.
Because he doesn't look a lot like Cordarrelle Patterson.
No, but he's this big dude. He's super athletic. He's great in space with the ball. Sometimes he can take runs and do like Janu style, but he's scored touchdowns running the ball.
Yeah.
But mostly it's because he has these big flash games or flash plays.
Yeah.
And then he's gone. Like, he'll be gone for weeks or gone for, like, he'll have a 40-yard play, and then he's gone for the rest of the game.
And he looks great on the play.
Yeah, exactly.
When fantasy owners see that play and go, oh, my God, he's, you know, he's such a talent. They'll have to find ways to get him the ball, and then the Rams wouldn't.
Exactly. But the hope here is Disley has been great when in the game, and then he gets injured. And they've had tight ends have good games there. I think that's the hope, is that Everett is healthy all year, and he's their, you know, one-man tight end show.
Which could end up being the case.
He's going tight end 20. He's going behind Higby, which I think is actually fair, because I think Higby...
They should both be going quite a bit
Higby's
higher.
Higby's a lot safer, but yeah. Everett has some really high upside, I think.
Irv Smith's going before them, and Irv Smith shouldn't go before them.
Conklin's going to be a problem.
Conklin's going to be a
problem.
People
don't realize Conklin's going to be...
You know, they're most coaches... when the most coaches talk, you should assume they're lying.
Yeah.
Mike Zimmer is generally honest to a fault.
Yeah.
And when Mike Zimmer tells you that Irv Smith's not going to break out, you should listen to him. Coaches never say our guy's not going to break out. But what, so he does, I would pay attention to that.
The Vikings play two tight end sets, like second most in the league or something, and they play three tight end sets the most in the league, which is unreal.
Well, it tells you how bad their offensive
line is. That tells you how, offensive line and wide receiver three.
Yeah, like, which they don't have.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Okay, so give me the riskiest player at current ADP for the Seahawks.
It's Tyler Lockett.
For sure.
I think I was pretty clear on that one.
Too. Player with the most upside compared to ADP, do we both think it's Chris Carson?
It's Chris Carson. I mean, you could make a case for Everett just because tight end 20 is really low for a guy that could be a starting tight end every a lot of weeks. But yeah, it's Chris Carson who could be an RB1, and he's going at RB9, or you know, a top 12 running back.
Yeah.
But he's going at RB19.
When we come back, the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray coming off a huge season. We'll tell you if we like that to repeat. Can he get better in year three? There are some key changes to this team we're going to talk about, and we will help identify the riskiest and upside players from the Arizona Cardinals when we come back. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish with you. Arizona brings back the highest scoring quarterback in many fantasy leagues, Kyler Murray, last year. And Scott, the way he turned into it was the huge vault in the running output that he had from his rookie year to his sophomore year. Roughly double the yards, and he went all the way to 11 rushing touchdowns last year.
I will say a little bit was expected. I mean, when he injured his shoulder in his rookie season, he stopped running the ball.
Yeah.
So you knew the running numbers would come up. But not that much.
No, not that much.
I don't think anyone expected that.
Now, a little bit troubling, the passing numbers remained pretty modest. 3,900 passing yards is not a lot in today's NFL.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love that we think 3,900 is not a lot.
I know. In Fran Tarkenton's era, that was a lot.
like, I'm pretty sure Steve Young in 92 led the NFL with 23 touchdown passes in like under 3,000 yards.
You're probably right. His 26 touchdowns are, you know, 26 touchdowns were okay, but really 3,900 yards, 26 touchdowns means he was passing as well as Phillip Rivers, Baker Mayfield. I mean, you know, those are not high output passers from a fantasy standpoint, and that's where Kyler Murray was. So the hope here is the passing in his third year gets a little bit better for Kyler Murray. So even if he doesn't get the 11 rushing touchdowns and run, even the most mobile quarterbacks almost never back-to-back
even those if he doesn't get seasons. The 11 rushing touchdowns.
Right. Like Lamar Jackson, who obviously had rushing numbers fell off a cliff after 2 years ago. You know, you don't, even if that falls off, the hope is that the improvements in his passing will offset it a little bit. Where it gets really interesting is, what if the running numbers do hold up and he's a better passer?
That's in the range of outcomes.
It's possible.
It really is.
It is possible. Let's talk about his offensive line and his pass protection. It is a medium to good pass protection line, and they added center Rodney Hudson, who was awesome as a pass blocker for most of his career. He's in his 12th year, but he still has got tread on the tire, and the Raiders just, you know, blew up their whole offensive line and started over. And the Cardinals bring him in here. He will help. And then they've got left tackle DJ Humphries, who was very good last year. Pro Football Focus tracked Humphries with the highest percentage of positive run blocks in the league.
Wow.
So there's some talent on the offensive line. Guards and, just okay. But
maybe Kyler won't be running for his life anymore.
Maybe he won't be. And that could be all right too. So let's go to the focal point of the receiving group. And that's obviously DeAndre Hopkins, a mild disappointment last year, finishing 9th in fantasy points, but mostly because he only had 6 touchdowns, his lowest in 5 years. But DeAndre Hopkins is as consistent as they come, and you figure the touchdowns will regress positively back to the 9 or so that he typically gets.
Yep.
And I think he's going off the board at wide receiver 4 in the early second round. I think that sounds just right for him.
Yep.
No issue with that at all. After Hopkins, the whole rest of anybody else who could catch a pass is all up in the air here.
Yeah.
And everything's very muddy. A.J. Green, Christian Kirk, Rondell Moore, all battling for playing time. They do use a lot of 4-receiver sets, so all 4 will be on the field sometimes. And where it's kind of fascinating is if you think Kyler Murray's going to throw the same 26 touchdowns he had last year, and if we think like 10 are going to go to DeAndre Hopkins. That leaves 16 unaccounted touchdowns. Yeah. So there's room for somebody to do well. So let's start with AJ Green, who was straight garbage last year.
Quit complimenting him.
People forget he played all 16 games last year. All 16, it was either two or three touchdowns on the season. That's it. He was wide receiver 74 in fantasy.
I think he even had a double-digit target day where he caught one ball.
I think that did happen, which is embarrassing. This contract is a one-year deal for $6 million guaranteed, which is kind of a lot, $6 million guarantee for a guy coming off that season. So I think he has some kind of role in this team, and maybe the new environment ends up helping him. But can you say at this stage that A.J. Green is better than Christian Kirk?
Nope.
I can't either. So I don't know that Green is how much he's going to be on the field. I think Kirk's on the field more than Green is, and I think I'd prefer to have Christian Kirk if I had to pick one of the two. He's in his fourth season. But Christian Kirk is only 24 years old. He's still very young. He's still got room to improve, which we would take. And last year, a little more than a bye week fill-in. His non-touchdown games were a total disaster for Kirk, where he averaged 3 receptions for 30 yards.
Yeah.
And he ended up finishing as wide receiver 58 last year.
Yeah, I don't think I'm touching either of those guys.
No, I don't think I want either one. Maybe more interesting is second-round rookie Rondell Moore. You like Rondell Moore?
I do. I have been quoted as saying that when I watched film on him, he reminded me of a squirrel in traffic, how quickly he changed direction.
He is a water bug and a squirrel.
It's
and a little incredible. Bit of both.
Yeah.
And he's 5'7". He's tiny, but he is fast, and his whole deal is change of direction.
Yeah.
Right? He will make opposing players look ridiculous.
Yep.
Look silly. And he'll get slot work. He will be the star. I think in week one, he's your starting slot receiver on this team.
I think so, too.
He'll get bubble screens, gadget plays. They'll even run him periodically if they use him at all like he got used in college. And he needs to stay healthy. That was a problem in college. Now he's going to have even bigger and faster guys hitting his 5'7" frame. Yep. And I think that's the worry on Rondell Moore.
Squirrels get hit sometimes.
Squirrels get hit. What do you think about if he's going to get hit in traffic? Do we call him Roadkill Moore instead of Rondell Moore? Can this be our first official nickname of the 2021 season? Roadkill Moore?
It seems a little mean, but...
It is a little mean. He's not hurt yet. Do we have to wait for him to get hurt?
Yeah, I think you got to wait for him to take some hits first.
All right. When he gets hurt... So it's going to be like week four, and I'm going to have forgotten about this. When it's week four and it's early October, remind me. Roadkill Moore.
Make a note for 4 months.
All right. Thank you very much. Twitter will help me out there. Of this group, no, we'll come back and talk a little more about them later. Tight ends, nothing to even talk about here.
Nope.
There is no tight end worth
any of them. Dan Arnold's gone.
That's right, and that's all that matters. Let's go to the running backs, and where I am also really hesitant with the running backs here. Some people are high on Chase Edmonds. I'm not. I can't muster any enthusiasm for him. Nope. He's not a goal line back. He's only been allowed to run one time from inside the 5-yard line.
At least he scored on that, right?
No, he did not.
Minus one
yards on his one run from inside the 5-yard line. Thought you were tricking me for a second there.
Nope.
So, the hope is Kenyon Drake is gone and that, Chase Edmonds is going to pick up a lot of that role, but I don't think he will. And I think he is nothing more than a 50-50 player with James Conner, who we're going to talk about in a minute. And I think Conner's going to get the goal line work. And even when Kenyon Drake would miss some time, Edmonds didn't always make an impact. Look at week 9 last year. He got 25 touches with Kenyon Drake out, turned into 88 scoreless yards. That's it.
That's not good.
No, that's not good. Barely three yards a touch. His best attributes for Chase Edmonds are his hands. He's going to catch probably 50, 60 balls. PPR safety net. Flex guy, if you just want to get your 4 receptions, your 40 yards, and your like 40 rushing yards.
So basically, he should be being drafted maybe a round ahead of the McKissicks.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple rounds ahead of the Cohens and Hines and stuff, but that's not where he's going.
No, in fact, we'll talk about exactly that in just a second. For James Conner, I thought he looked totally spent last year. I think the career is all but over, but Chase Edmonds isn't a full-time back. And so I think Connor's going to get some run here. probably in the neighborhood of 120 touches, something like that. It'll be 8, 9, 10 touches a game, and Connor probably gets the goal line work. And mm-hmm. I don't want any part of either one of these guys. I don't think they're very good.
No. And I could mention that James Connor through his career has been like a top five guy in goal line work, inside the five work, yep. First down plunges, stuff like that. But yep. He might not be that guy
continues.
Anymore. Yeah, he'll probably continue yep. that role, but yep. he may not be that guy anymore. He might not be efficient.
He looked so bad last year. And I know the Steelers' offensive line was horrendous, but at some point, like Dalvin Cook has been running behind a horrendous offensive line. Christian McCaffrey's been running behind a horrendous offensive line, and they still are productive. James Conner couldn't do that. And then you also add in the further frustration that's going to come from Kyler Murray, who does run from inside the five. They've given him 11 carries inside the five in his 2 years, and that's going to add to the frustration for Chase Edmonds and James yep. Conner owners.
I don't think that's stopping. He might be Josh Allen with for that. Even at his size, he's more of their goal linebacker.
He might be. The riskiest player at their ADP is Chase Edmonds going off the board in round 6, running back 29, I think is totally unwarranted for reasons we just mentioned. The player with the most upside compared to ADP, Rondale Moore, wide receiver 74, sure.
yep.
round 16. We'll take that. That's solid. That's solid value right there. Big playability. I don't know how long he'll be upright, but I like Rondale Moore.
Oh, yeah. I like it. Yes, I agree.
Well, before he goes to roadkill.
Yes.
All right. We've had fun.
We did. Don't
be a stranger.
It was a long podcast. I feel that's partly because we haven't talked in such a while.
I know. It has been a long time. And yeah. we got all the Scott Fishbowl stuff to talk yes. about at the beginning. Yep. So that's was really
true.
Fun, too.
True.
I believe Brian Johnson back next week. We'll also have an episode of the Chop Podcast next week. We're getting into almost weekly scheduling.
Chop season.
It is Chop season's coming up. And as a reminder, the Chop season can start now for you with the Scott Fishbowl 11 Guillotine League. Go to guillotineleagues.com. Follow Scott and I on Twitter for more information about that. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.